you attitude while you do the maximum
sound.
Let me first take this opportunity to welcome you back and say waka waka is over. And Shakira is gone. Philip is no longer here.
But the tune lingers on.
The tune lingers on. But I think what is important is that we've done ourselves quite in South Africa. Mary Dalton Thomas will be better ambassador for South Africa and Africa as a whole. We should really appreciate and thank ordinary South Africans in Zanzi. I think those are the people who really made the vibe, the rhythm, the warmth, hospitality to our visitors. Those in the leisure industry, I'm sure they are also just smiling all the way to their nearest financial institution. Let's hope the spirit that was galvanized throughout the World Cup tournament will continue to inspire us, because as a matter of fact, I think everybody behaved. Everybody had his or her mind and heart at the right place. It only demonstrates that we can do it. Working together, we can do more. And we've done it, and I think we should carry that spirit forward. And that's the spirit that should guide our work moving forward as a committee, parliament, and as leaders of society, wherever we go. That's the spirit we should harness. Let's thank ourselves for that. Major achievement. Having said so, we are back at work. I said Philip is no more longer here, but he's not dead. Philip will be with us in our work. Thank you. Honorable members, we are here today as our first day of reporting to our official duty to consider, in form of our deliberations, the South African Reserve Bank Amendment Bill as presented to us just before we went on a long constituency period. Before we forget, let me just recap that when this bill was presented before us, we had a discussion. We had a discussion and a presentation from the Reserve Bank. We took public hearings. The Reserve Bank came back to respond to quite a number of issues and presented a thick document that I hope honorable members had the time to go through. As much as we're celebrating, but at least work should have continued in our respective corners and moments. Now, we are back here to apply our mind on the proposed amendments of the Reserve Bank. I must also say, the minister has indicated that these amendments are a stopgap measure intervention in the management of the affairs of the Reserve Bank. Broader discussions are still going to take place and unfold, and this committee, it is its right to call for more discussion and a broader discussion probably at a later stage. These amendments were never meant to address other issues that were not tabled before the committee. I thought I should just remind honorable members of the intentions of these amendments before us. In terms of process and procedure, what the committee members are expected to do is to reflect on the submissions, to reflect on the presentations of the National Treasury and SARS, I mean, South African Reserve Bank, and see as to whether there's any other information that is needed for us to agree or not to agree with the proposed amendments. I thought I should just give that background so that as we enter the discussions, we have a common understanding and background of where we come from with this proposed amendment before us. Welcome, Madlamini.
Thank you very much, and I'm so sorry, Chair.
Yeah, no, we understand that Shakira was still lingering in the minds of many others. So we are not going to be responding adequately or at the same time on this kind of new challenges.
Thank you for your attention for that.
Yeah. Let me also indicate that Dr. George and Honorable Swart, they are not present, but the DA...
Just off.
Oh. I know
that I'm very quiet.
Dr. George is abroad, but Honorable Ravi is here from the DA side. There is an Honorable Swart.
Another
Swart.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay, Steve. Okay, Steve. No, you are present. We know that.
Thank you.
Yeah, but I just wanted to make sure that for record purposes, and I did try to speak to Honorable George last night, he's still in London, but he'll be coming back in a week or so. We can proceed with our work, Honorable Members. Thank you. I hope Honorable Members had time to look into the document, especially the thick one, because I think that will take us a long way in terms of understanding the issue that we need to deal with. Before we consider the bill, clause by clause, perhaps let's have a general discussion as committee members in terms of the responses and the input that have been made so that we are at one. Steve?
Yes, thank you, and thank you for your warm words of welcome, and we just share your sentiments about the World Cup being a great success. And I think the British tabloids in particular need to eat their words and apologize to us in a certain way. But just that, and I think the tune lingers on, as you said. But Chair, just to get to the bill, I've read the documentation, and I'd like to focus maybe on the corporate governance issues. I think in broad terms, I've looked at it, and I'm in general agreement. But the appointment of the directors, I'd maybe just like a bit more of an explanation, because that obviously is a key aspect that has been raised, and I'm not sure in the responses whether it was dealt with adequately. And if I could ask members just to look at the response on page 7 from 6-7 from the departmental response to DARS's submission. And maybe I could just get greater clarification why, I'm trying to understand why there are four other directors appointed by the president. That obviously introduces a new dimension. Those directors are not vetted by the panel, and the distinction between those directors and the seven directors that are elected by the shareholders, clearly I can see the distinction, but why are those, should we accept that four directors are to be appointed by the president? Why are they not vetted or considered by a panel? And we will then, I don't see that aspect raised by DARS is addressed, short of there being an issue relating to the separation of powers in another submission, that there was a short response in that regard. And I'd like to just get my head around it. I'm sure that you've had a lot of discussion around that, but I think that's probably the central issue, is the whole issue of corporate governance, how are we going to handle that. And I do appreciate that this is a stop gap, but we need to be mindful of us as Parliament giving the President and the Minister wide powers to appoint four other directors besides the seven directors that are elected by the shareholders, who are then vetted by this panel. Thank you, Chair.
Now let's just take more. Any other matter that seeks to be clarified? Okay.
Thank you. All the honourable members. May I just point out that typical of the central bank that has retained private shareholding. Private shareholding is shared between government and private shareholders in a fashion that government may exercise control. So out of the board, previously we had a board of 14 directors. Seven were appointed by government and seven by the private shareholders, and with the amendments we intend to increase the control of government by adding one more director that's appointed by government. So what you actually find is you're going to find that eight directors are going to be appointed by the President, that's by government. The difference between the four that have been mentioned by the honourable member here and the executives that consist of the governor and the three deputy governors is that the President will consult with the board before he can actually appoint any one of these persons. But in the case of the four other independent directors that are going to be appointed by government, the President does not have to consult with the board. Now, the reason why the four directors, that is, the four that are appointed, that are independent, are going to be appointed by government, and the seven, the difference between their appointment, I think, is where the question boils down to. The argument is that you have, in the amendments as they are written here, you have a clear set of what fit and proper requirements all directors must actually meet. That has been clearly written into the amendments here. They are part of it. The argument was that what was the problem in the past with corporate governance? The problem we had with the appointment of directors in the past was, in the case of directors appointed by shareholders, these type of attributes that directors needed to have, it was not adhered to. In other words, virtually any person could actually be appointed as a director of the bank by shareholders without really meeting some criteria. This was not a problem that we had in the case of the appointment of directors by the government, obviously because the government adheres to these requirements. So what these amendments are trying to introduce here is a mechanism whereby the same sort of requirements can actually be also be introduced with regard to directors appointed by private shareholders, this body, this panel now being the mechanism whereby one can ensure that this is done. So in short, to summarize what I'm saying is that in the past we never had any problems with the appointees that were appointed by government because they adhered to the requirements of corporate governance. But the problem we had was with the appointment of directors by shareholders, and now we want to rectify this by getting this panel into place that actually then would vet these directors.
If I understand the role of the central bank, independent, but the role of government, one can also relate it to Chapter 9 institutions of the Constitution to a certain degree and the appointment of those processes. Now, in those cases, often one has the concept of fit and proper person, but there's always a vetting process. Why does the panel not vet the directors appointed by the President?
To determine fit and proper.
Does the President then, you see, I understand your issue, but why? What is the distinction? Why do those, and understand the government appoint certain and the private, the shareholders, but
why doesn't
why aren't those directors also confirmed or vetted by that panel? Thank you.
In the drafting, we went out from the presumption that the experience also showed in the past that directors appointed by government, by the president, were vetted by the president himself and by the board and by the Minister of Finance, because they were all the parties that needed to be consulted. So therefore there was this mechanism in place whereby one could actually infer that a certain vetting process took place, which culminated in these directors being appointed that all met with those requirements. That was what we relied on. So remember, what you have is you have the president appointing, the president in consults with the board, and also with the Minister of Finance. So these three parties, in between them, the argument is that they actually do what is necessary. They do the necessary vetting between themselves, amongst themselves, to meet the requirements. But what was absolutely lacking in the past was this type of process, or a process in the case of directors appointed by shareholders, by private shareholders.
Okay, I'm sorry to labour the point, but I just don't understand the...
What is your proposal?
I just want to understand what would the implications be if the four other directors were also vetted by the panel. What would the implications be? It's not, it's purely, there might be unintended consequences.
My question would just be, if you take the president as the head of state that needs to appoint directors and represents, you know, the responsibility of the state with regard to the central bank, would it be proper in the circumstances to have a panel also vetting the head of state's choice in appointing directors to the board? That would just be my question here, my counter question. I think this was something that drove us from the beginning, you know, is that we don't want to question the head of state exercising this function by then getting a panel to sort of second guess the appointment of the president of the country.
No.
Let's allow other honourable members to assist. Honourable Dlamini, Madame.
Thank you, Chair. The first one, Chair, is on page 4, and it goes in, where it relates on a fit and proper. If you remember, Chair, we said somehow, some way, whether it comes on the directive or regulations, but we need to understand as a committee, what are these fit and what are the skills? What are the skills involved and what experience is involved for a person to be so-called fit and proper? As a committee, I think I will really be, and I'll be very, very comfortable that even when that panel starts doing the vetting, we know that their vetting is based on what? And secondly, we looked at the page. It's page 6 of the amendment. 4A, the functions and the powers of board, of the board. And it's clause C, remains. General remuneration policy of the bank. And then it says, and allocation of funds. What I propose, and which I still strongly believe, that we need to actually indicate that this general remuneration policy of the bank, which should be looked at or reviewed by the board needs to do that in consultation. In consultation with the relevant stakeholders. It could be the governor, or it could be the minister of finance, it could be the committee, whoever that is relevant, whatever body that is relevant. And still on the same functions and the powers of the board, the clause F, performing any other functions specifically assigned to the board in terms of this act. We highlighted that it would be good to perform whatever competence is given to the board, but if there is no monitoring tool, then it makes the committee not being able to do the follow-up of whatever competencies that they were laid down are being executed accordingly. And then page 8, Chair. I think this was in particular raised by myself, where I said when you look at section 22 of the Principal Act, when it speaks about the shareholding, the amendment, it's still not clear to us whether when the shareholders acquire, together with its associates, acquire these shares, was it before the amendment of the Principal Act? If not, why then this amendment is still giving a privilege that in the what is needed from them is just to disclose. It's just to disclose. So I don't know if the chair has that. So
yeah.
My last one is about the shares and the votes, the voting powers.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Len.
Good morning,
Peter. You know, we've just come back from a very very positive event.
I can't hear properly. Can I approach?
No, stand where you are. You know the spirit of togetherness,
yes,
which we have all embraced. Now, in a committee meeting such as this one, even if you want to do what you are doing and you have deliberated about it, you still have to ask for permission. You don't just barge.
Mr. Chairman, I did this morning speak to Bradley for me, and I told him that I would be doing it, and there was no objection.
Well, that discussion between you and Mr. Bradley does not necessarily bind the chairperson.
Well, I didn't know that, and he didn't.
Yeah, you still have to do it.
May I talk?
No.
You have already started doing it.
Yes. Sorry, but I was under the impression that it is a public meeting, as Bradley said. And that it would be okay.
We don't want to debate this matter. But I'm just saying,
yeah,
it's a matter of courtesy, inform the chairperson.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can proceed.
Thank you very
but
much.
In future,
yes, then I will
clear it. Even if it is a public meeting, the chair's got the right to actually say to anybody who attends this meeting, if you don't abide by the rules,
yeah, no,
you can be excused and close that door from your back.
Yeah.
But that's fine.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, honourable members, I think as we deliberate this matter, I thought we should try to pick up a point, concur around it, not be all over. Otherwise, even the legal team will keep on explaining one thing over the other from time to time. I wanted us to go to the issue of Honorable Swart and conclude that particular matter as to whether there's anything that we think would be undermined by the President exercising his prerogative powers in terms of what has been the practice, even in terms of the act itself, that he appoints directors directly into the board. Now, he's saying those people should actually go through another process of vetting. I want us just to reflect on that, whether it is correct, before we make a ruling on this particular matter. But just also to say, our last interaction with the governor of the Reserve Bank No, just listen. If I know you to be very patient, then you pray for us from time to time. The governor went at length, you know, detailed explanations of how these amendments will assist in strengthening the institution and its independence. I think what is important for us is to preserve the independence of the Reserve Bank at the end of the day. So that as we begin to talk about consultation, that consultative process between the executive and the Reserve Bank itself should not result in undermining the independence of the Reserve Bank, because as Parliament, we have a responsibility to guard that independence of the Reserve Bank. But I want us to conclude on the matter that the Honorable Stephen Swart has raised. Honorable Madlamini.
Thank you, Chair. I do understand the sentiments that which Honorable Swart is highlighting to us as the committee. But if you look at Clause 2D, Clause 2D indicates that the panel will screen the potential directors. Now, to me, Honorable Swart, if the president has used his prerogative and nominated the people, because even the very same candidate that will be vetted by the panel will still, that doesn't mean that after they've been vetted, they will be recommended and be approved by them. The clause calls them potential. So I therefore do not agree that when the president uses his prerogative, then the committee or any other person needs to question that. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Speaker.
Anyone that is appointed by government at the level of a director, that person is vetted or has to be vetted. So I don't see why do we have to vet these people twice when the system within government that makes them go through the vetting, and now we want them to be vetted by the panel of officers. But if that is incorrect, I want
This is a clarification. Honorable
Gordon Wolf. Thank you,
to
the legal advisors. Paragraph E, in terms of the amendment, will that also apply to the directors appointed by the president of the consultation?
That is correct, yeah.
That's important.
Yeah. I think the principle over there, and I think it's very important for the question that was asked, all directors need to be fit and proper. No directors excused from being fit and proper. The mechanism to ensure that the president's appointments are fit and proper are the president and the process which the president needs to go through. There was no mechanism to deal with that amongst the shareholder group, and that's what the amendment sought to achieve, and that's how we've addressed it on that basis. We hear the issues, but we think that the mechanisms are now in place for both appointments, i.e. by the government and by shareholders. Thank you.
Thanks. Steve, that's your case.
Chair, I'm almost satisfied, but can I just... you see, coming from the Justice Portfolio Committee, we sit and we vet for the Human Rights Commission, for example. There's a different process, comes via Parliament, but the wording is the same. It's appointed by the President via a parliamentary process. I understand that you've had a problem with shareholders, directors not being vetted, fit and proper. So we introduce now a panel for them to determine fit and proper and to vet them. I still am just looking at the issue of four other directors. What would why would it be so onerous if those nominations of those four other directors were to go through the same panel and the president vets it at a later stage? Then that same panel, because now the huge implication is that the government's appointments to the panel are then in the majority. That's the big shift, sea shift.
No, it's not the shift.
It's 8-7 now.
Yeah, it's not a shift, and I'll tell you why. I think that's the point that the governor tried to make on the last occasion. Government, and that Dr. Diarra started off with, government has always had that control
In
the legislation. The point there is that the governor always has a casting vote.
Yeah.
The governor appointed by the president. What we have tried to achieve is to take away this conflict position whereby you put the governor in a position where, as head of the board, as the governor currently is, and as the unitary board which we have at the SAAB, you're calling upon the governor to exercise that role or that function or that power. So all that has transpired now is, in effect, the governor's casting vote has been taken away and being given to another director. It's not increasing any power on the side of government. It's just, as it were, reshifting the balances so that government continues to exercise the power that it's always exercised. It's not been sought to change that position at all, and it hasn't been changed factually and fundamentally.
I'll leave it at that.
Okay. That's your case. Okay. Thanks, Honorable Swart. Any other comments? Okay. In the absence of that, we are going to go close by close. Close by close. Yes. Page 1, which is 2 effectively. Any comments? This is the title.
A great
one. Page 3. I hope everyone has a copy. This appears to be the easiest meeting I'm going to chair, because you've just come back, all of you. Good. Page 4. Madame.
Thank you, Chair. It's not in. How? The request was, we understand about fit and proper. Where are we going to get a clear defined fit and proper regarding the skills and the experience when the panel conduct the vetting? Thank you.
Good. All right. Page 5. Page 5. For record. Agreed.
Yes.
Page 6. I'm chairing the meeting. You are protected.
Thank you. Okay, if you can explain, because I've mentioned this thing, something maybe is valid.
Yeah, no, just say what you wanted to say.
No.
No,
so I wanted to, from the passage in the powers of the board,
okay.
Clause C, it's not a bullet.
Which clause are we going to have?
on page 6? Clause 4A, I mean, point 4A, functions and the powers of the board, of the board. It's Roman number 5, under clause C. General remuneration policy of the bank. Then it should say end. Allocation of funds. Now, I was requesting to say that because they end that task in consultation with the minister.
Mr. Dilla.
Mr. Chair, as was explained before when we met here, what we actually did here was we codified the role of the board as it had functioned in the past. Now, if we refer specifically to Q4 here, their remuneration policy, remember the board is consists of executives and non-executives. So there is conversation between the non-executives and the executives when they determine the number of remuneration policy
of the bank, and they've also got a remuneration committee that actually reports to the bank where also consultation takes place. The retirement fund that we're talking about here is a retirement fund, not a general retirement fund. It's just a retirement fund of the bank employees itself. So it's not a wider one. It only has an effect on employees and previous employees of the bank. So therefore, there's no consultation with the minister here because it only affects the persons that used to work for the bank and were previous employees of the bank.
Okay. All right. Accepted?
Yes, sir. If it can be general.
Okay.
The last one for the check is the F, where it talks about the performing. I'm requesting if you can say performing any other functions specifically assigned to the board in terms of the act and also monitoring, the monitoring part of it. They will perform, the board will perform, but if we also put in the amendments that we will, it will be monitored.
Honorable Van Royen.
Chair, I'm not sure to what extent will that approach, I mean, add value to clause C, subsection, Roman figure 2, because it speaks of annual reports that must be submitted also to us as parliament.
Mm.
And in my take, I mean, that's the aspect of monitoring.
Mm.
And I think it's one thing that we exhausted last time, because it was all our concern, how do we link the board performance to our oversight role.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Any other thing on page 6? Page 7? Let's say 8. Page 9, for those who don't hear me. Dean? Memorandum of the objectives. Okay. Any comments here? This seems to be bringing us almost to the end of the deliberation, and it would appear these amendments unite us.
Yes,
we are united around these amendments.
Especially after the World Cup, we are still united.
Some say Iowa. Honorable Rabi.
Thank you, Chair.
Chair, I speak on behalf of the DA. We are very much in favour of the independence of the Reserve Bank, but Chairman, the spokesperson and the deputy spokesperson is not here. We have a approach to legislation that we submit legislation to our caucus. This has not been done. So, Chair, I'll have to ask you that the DA retains its original position, but we're definitely not opposed towards it. We'll just have to pass this piece of legislation before our caucus. Thank you, Chair.
Agreed with that approach. It has always been a standard approach. It's a norm. Now, before the Chair could say anything, it is important that the committee agrees on record, and I'm going to read what has been prepared, the standard procedure. Standing Committee on Finance, report of the Standing Committee on Finance on the South African Reserve Bank Amendment Bill, B10/2010, National Assembly Section 75, dated 20th July 2010. The Standing Committee on Finance, having considered and examined the South African Reserve Bank Amendment Bill, B10/2010, National Assembly Section 75, referred to it and classified by the JTM as a Section 75 bill, reports the bill without amendment. Agreed?
Yes.
And then the chairperson of the committee, by the name of T.M. Mufamadi, Member of Parliament, will sign in front of all of you. Thank you very much, Honorable Member. Oh, it's signed. Honorable Members, before you start moving, if you looked into our program, we're supposed to meet again tomorrow to continue with the deliberations. There's no need for us to come back and have this deliberation. We've concluded the deliberations today. And what the chairperson will then do is to interact with the Speaker of Parliament to take into consideration the requests by the Reserve Bank and National Treasury in particular, that we should try to speed up this amendment as quickly as possible. That is going to be taken care of immediately after this meeting. Thank you very much. I wish we can have this kind of constructive meetings throughout the remaining period of this year. Thank you very much. So, Brad, you can go and do your work.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Madam, I haven't given you a hug, man.
Okay.
All right. Just again.
Can I email? I've got it on the computer.
Bradley? You'll find in the office.
Can they have a meeting there? The web. Now or later?
Okay.